And we are back. Glenn and Simon in the house, here for you to take your best sales decisions. This session of the Sales Squad is for you to decide, should you reinvest your profits into your own business and growing that, or into assets that grow while you sleep? Let's find out. Glenn and I will go through pros and cons, examples, risks, opportunities, so that in 20 minutes, you guys can decide what your best way forward is. So let's kick it off. Should we invest into our own business or should we invest into assets? What do you think, Len?
All right, Simon. Thanks for being here with me. Okay, so I'm going to take, invest in your own business. And I'm going to champion that for today. So, I don't want to look at other asset classes or publicly traded stocks. I just want to look at my own business. So, why would I do that? Why would I invest in my own business? And I'd say, the simple answer is your business can look like any other investment, but you have insider information. Who knows your own business better than you do? Who can determine it if investing in your business is a good idea better than you? So I think that's the starting point. And that's where I say, yeah, definitely invest in your own business. You know your operations, you know your market, you know if there's opportunities there. And let's say you want to reinvest in your business. Maybe you have cash accumulated inside the business. Maybe you have some personal savings sitting around, or you even might want to borrow money to make an investment. Typically, business owners, the first thing that they're going to look at is some kind of property, plant, and equipment, because they want to boost profitability through efficiency gains, which is just more work from the same amount of time. But you also have the option to grow and scale your business. And I think that's where it gets interesting, right? Because, as the business owner, you have your hands on the levers. You know what you can do. But it has to be done intelligently, and everything you do needs to be aligned with your strategic plan. As consultants, the critical question that we ask all clients is, okay, if you were going to 10x your sales, what area breaks first? Right. And that's a moment of, honest, self-reflection. Okay. Wow. What can my business handle? And we look at marketing, sales, operations, and finance. So maybe you've got an incredible marketing team and sales team, but maybe operations is a problem and, you run into fulfillment problems. This could be an area where, hey, I buy equipment for operations. I hire new people for fulfillment. Maybe an additional finance person to handle AR problems and keep cash coming in. But when you're thinking about that, of what area, one thing that comes to mind is Strategy Sprints has a great audit online that can check where you're strong and where you're weak. So I think that's an important tool.
And when you find a bottleneck, you can invest into removing that bottleneck. It can be hiring, operations, hiring, whatever the delivery bottleneck is, right?
Yeah. Knowing your bottleneck tells you where to invest inside your business, at least where to start. Because as soon as you open up one bottleneck, another one's going to appear. So theoretically, there's always a bottleneck in your business. And kind of jumping from bottleneck to bottleneck is one of your roles as a business owner and the CEO. I'd say also, when you're scaling a business, most people think, okay, more sales. That's all I need to do to grow my business is just get more sales. And that's definitely true. And your market, hey, there's more people inside my niche that I haven't reached. And so what can I do? Maybe I need to expand my marketing team or my sales team. But also, not just thinking about new customers, but are there opportunities for expansion? Can I upsell to my existing customers or cross-sell or getting referrals from them? And if you've been neglecting some of these things and you want to start it, it takes time, and time is money. So this is not just a free thing. It is going to take some resources to start generating referrals from your existing client base.
Let me take the other side of this. What if I say, wait, I have a business so that the business generates money for me. So I don't want to put my money into the business. I want the business to generate money for me. So when I start a business, I will look first at, is it really that capital intensive? Or can it immediately pay itself from the cash flows, meaning the client pays for the services and some of those profits I reinvest into my assets. What if it's very, very capital intensive? Well, the first question is, do I need really to start the hardest business that I can start? Or can I start the easiest business that there is, which is one that generates cash flows immediately? Professional services, SaaS, that immediately captures value without having huge capital intensive requirements, no CapEx, because there is no machinery involved.
I would jump in and say there's trade-offs, right? Lots of investment and capital equipment is a barrier to entry for competitors. But it does require that. That's a risk in itself in investing in that equipment. It's definitely easier to go in and start a service business, consulting business, where you start generating cash immediately. And I think your barrier to entry is doing that in a smart way. Is having your strategic goals and figured out in how you're going to run one of those types of businesses. But go ahead.
Sometimes it's not possible. For example, ASML is creating the machinery that creates microchips. That's a 200 million machine. That's hardware. Nobody can compete right now on the planet because of the barrier to entry. But what was in NVIDIA do? They send an email to TSMC and say, can you produce this? And TSMC says, hey, ASML, can you build a machine? I need to produce this for NVIDIA. They just sent me a PDF in an email. So if I start a business, I start something like NVIDIA, which is a PDF in an email. Easier to start, right? And it's incredible that they actually send an email. Because they design, right? They design, they have engineers, they design, and then they send a PDF via email, and somebody else has have huge CapEx to take it from there. So if I can, I start with the design part, with the services part. For example, if it's a SaaS business, let's say I'm building a CRM for an enterprise. Now I can start that SaaS as a service. I do four clients, high ticket, that generates cash flow, and then I build it with that cash flow and I put it on repeat. So I would always start with the services part because it can pay itself and yourself. And then I would put it either scale it as a software or scale it via IP lending or scale it with different mechanisms, can be franchise, that doesn't require and in a huge initial capital investment, if I can. Sometimes it's not possible. But I would definitely do that in the beginning. Hey, we're starting a business. What is the direct path? What is the easiest way for us to grow this and then later on scale this?
Yeah, definitely. Going after, and cash flow is a problem that small businesses struggle with. And so if your business model is based around generating cash flow immediately, that's a great problem that you've already solved. There's a lot of, you know, capital intensive service businesses or product businesses, and they have a cash cycle. They've got to, you know, buy their inventory, hold that until they can retrieve the cash from the customer. So that's a problem that you avoid, but in this route.
I recently had an experience There is a guy in Asia who is an incredible business person, runs huge masterminds, and I'm an investor group with him. So recently in WhatsApp, we were just talking and I go, hey, what's up with your investment? We were both investing heavily in Solana last year. And so I was, hey, how's your portfolio going right now? And he goes, Simon, I'm not investing into my portfolio anymore right now. I'm only investing into my business. It gave me a pause because I never do only one of those two things. Why would I? Why would I not be creating passive income on the side all the time as an entrepreneur if I have the chance to? Why would I put so much money into one thing? And he's building a software. So sometimes software teams go, okay, I need $500,000 now invested into this before it generates cash. And I didn't have so much time with him, but if I would sit down with him and have a drink, I would say, is this really the only way to do it? That you have to invest your personal capital in there? Because that's the most risky way to start it. What about having skin in the game with multiple shareholders? What about a way that generates cash flow? What about starting with the services part and then later on reusing those services as modules that become the software? So you basically write down what you were doing in a de-risked way because you know it works. Mm-hmm. And now you have the software. Do what you already know that works. Because most people start with the software and they don't know if it works. That's why it takes so much time to generate cash flow. That's why they need $500,000 to build it. But it's not the only way to do it.
Yeah, I like that approach in that you've already figured out what services people need and will utilize. And it's just a matter of once you figure that out, you start to codify that into a platform, into an app. And that, you know, that's de-risking that process and getting to where you can scale a service as a product, you know, as a piece of software.
So entrepreneurs listening, if you are at the beginning of your journey and you are building a firm, wherever you can, go for the high profits, low risk, low capex version of what you are building in the first stage, because it's lower risk and you don't have to put your capital at risk. It's enough that you're putting your time at risk. That's risky enough. Don't make it more risky, right? So if you can choose the CapEx light version of the business, in the example of ASML and TSMC and NVIDIA, you see that there is a huge difference in CapEx in those businesses, but they can both generate enormous revenues and market shares right now. But the risk situation is really different. Also, the profitability is very, very different, right? You want to have a profit rate that's net in the 80s or 90s. And you can do that if you start with the services part, especially because nowadays everybody's is okay with working online. So you basically have no expenses except software. That's the biggest expense now. It's not headquarters anymore. It's probably software and then people. The other side, should I go to the asset side? I take the asset side.
Yeah, let me pop off a couple of risks of investing in your small business, and they're pretty simple. You know where are your lead sources coming from? You know, because if you're getting all your leads from one referral partner, that can dry up overnight. They start sending them a different direction. Their brother-in-law gets into the business and they're going to send their referrals that way. You know, social media algorithms change and maybe you're not getting the exposure that you once were. Here's another one that I think people ignore as the business owner, you know, and your family's relying on this, you are the key man, you are the key employee. And if you get sick, then what happens? And, you know, you can look to Apple. Steve Jobs was at the height of his power and he got sick and died. And that's a catastrophic example, but you know, as a business owner, you could get sick and not be able to run your business. And so those are risks of investing in your own business. So now let's talk about investing in assets.
Let's take the other side. We invest in assets, not in our business. The assumption is our business should generate cash, so let it generate cash, and now some of that surplus cash, the one that I don't need, where do I invest that? That's the assets part. We want to build a long-term portfolio of assets, things like real estate, like passive income, like things that generate capital gains, or even income, like staking income, dividends income, rental income, so that you have a steady cash flow, multiple steady streams of cash flow, because being an entrepreneur is risky enough. We don't have to make it more risky. What if we can build some stability on the side so that we know if we need it, there is some stability there for the worst case scenario? And it's also, it's more fun to have wins all the time, because in some weeks as an entrepreneur, you just won't have wins. And in those weeks, I tell you where my wins come from. I look at my portfolio and I see those streams and I go, all right, everything is fine. Everything is fine. And you need that as an entrepreneur. It's a roller coaster. Don't expect that every month will be roses and honey. It's not. It's not milk and honey. It's a roller coaster.
It is. It is.
So it's better to have those multiple rivers flowing to you, because there is anyway an uphill battle on growing and scaling across countries. So, and then there's the hiring battle, and then there are legal battles. We will have so many battles. Have a part of your business that feels like a garden with multiple rivers, and they are all flowing to you. This will be the basis for you to endure the 5 years, 10 years, 15 years that you need to grow and scale your business. Now, examples of that. You remember 2 Mondays ago when the 200K club came together and we were looking at multiple income streams and mm-hmm. revenue streams. And I asked everyone, are you paying yourself at the beginning of the month? How many people raised their hand? It was an absolute minority that were paying themselves. So this is solopreneurs or owner of small businesses. And most of them didn't pay themselves at the beginning of the month, a fixed salary. So what they're doing instead is at the end of the month, let's see what's the profit. And depending on that, let's see what I can invest. So if you do that at the end of the month, you don't have a stable, steady, reliable process to build actually a portfolio of assets. Why is it important that you pay yourself first? Well, first for confidence and for stability. You know that as a self-employed person, as a solopreneur or as an entrepreneur, you have the confidence that you are running a business and this business is paying you, like if you would be an employee somewhere, mm-hmm. right? It's paying you. So that's the beginning. It makes something with your confidence. The second is you now can define a specific savings rate, because that's the basis for putting your surplus money into assets. You have to know, okay, will I put 10%, 15%, 20% of my monthly income into building assets, building positions? There is a recommendation by the Fidelity Group. They say 15% would be great for every adult. And ideally, you start in your 20s doing that. Now, if we are not in our 20s, anymore, we can't go back. But I can. I went back the spreadsheet for the 200K club and looked at my own different years. So as a student, I had 0% savings rate. Later, as an employee, I had very, very, very high savings rate because I had no time to spend it. And then on average, over the last 15 years, I got to 36%. Which made it possible to go from a net asset value of minus 50,000 to now recently surpass 1 million in net asset value. So you can do that in, what was it, 14 years, 13, 14 years, even without being a great investor, because I'm an absolute beginner still, but I apply half an hour a day to study those things and to create a system. And the system is really, okay, there are revenues. Which revenues can we put on repeat? Can I add subscription revenues to that? The next is, can I have some affiliate sales, referral sales, referral fees, capital gains? So one thing that I look at in an asset portfolio is, I like to have 1/3 real estate, 1/3 stocks, 1/3 digital assets. Because that is a good risk management. And then in each category, I have a thesis. I have to understand it. I learned from sure. Warren Buffett. If I don't understand it, I don't touch it. So I have to have a thesis. Right now, in the stocks department, my thesis is the winners of 2039 will be the companies that own the data and have the pricing power to monetize that data. So I'm not looking at the chips folks or the AI stocks that everybody's looking at. I'm looking at who will own the data. So I'm looking right now at companies like Amazon, Salesforce, Visa, MasterCard, Meta, Google, because they own our data. Even Netflix, because Netflix knows much more what my kids are doing than I know, actually. That's some pretty good data.
Me too.
So I'm looking at, okay, who owns our data? And second question, who has the pricing power to monetize that data? Because you can have a lot of data, but no pricing power, then it's just a resource. But if you have the pricing power and the data, I think that's the winning combination in 15 years. And I'm building a portfolio that should last 15 years. So picking a lane where you have an edge, you either know a lot because it's your expertise, it's your field, and so you're immersed in that. If you're tech, go tech. If you're health tech, go health tech. Or you decide, I'm going to study. I am going to immerse myself from now on. You can immerse yourself deeply in things in a few months if you really immerse yourself. Elon Musk had no idea on how to build cars. He said, for the next 6 months, I'm going to sleep here and immerse myself into this.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite successful so far. We will see. He's in the middle of the journey. But in terms of immersing himself, that worked quite well, right? So you can also decide, I'm going to have an edge on this because I will know what's going on and I will get the info early. I will have alpha here. I will have an edge. And then you pick that and build up the assets. So what are some cons of building assets? Well, while you're building assets, you cannot put it in yourself or in your business. Yes, that's a con. So why not doing both? You put some business profits into your business, and then I would say they should be directly correlated to sales. And some of them may be long-term correlated to marketing, because if you put it in marketing, it's just gone for this year, but it might create pricing power next year. So be aware of that. Mm-hmm. It's gone for this year, but it might create pricing power in 1 to 5 years. If you're willing to invest it, knowing that the return is a maybe in 1 to 5 years, put it in marketing. If you needed to have a return earlier, put it in sales. That's my rule for investing into the business. And hiring. And hiring, if it cannot be a commission-based role, then yes, it's a big expense and really think strategically when to do it. Now, assets is also rental income, dividends income, staking income, royalties from a book, for example. The Strategies Prince book is creating royalties. They're paid twice a week by the publisher. I get a check by the publisher. And now,
oh, very nice.
Yeah, it's a check. And then the now it's being translated in Chinese, and so there will be an additional stream from there. That's another publisher that bought the rights. And so that's totally passive. I wasn't even involved in the negotiations. So writing the book was a ton of work, but it's just 6 months of heavy lifting. But then you put it on repeat, you don't have to do anything, and really it creates steady royalties. Also, they sold the licenses to these summarizing platforms, you know, where instead of buying a full book, you get a 10-minute summary told to you, or a PDF. And so those guys have also to pay royalties to the publisher. And so those are all revenue streams where you put in 1 6 months, and then you have multiple revenue streams coming in a quote-unquote passive ways. Licenses, IP, you can do IP lending. You can do franchise kind of IP licenses. And then there is one part, which is owner profits. If you own a company, you should define a percentage of the profits that you get just because you own the company, and a percentage that the CEOs get, and they are usually performance-based in percentage. There are more aggressive ones and there are more conservative ones if it's more or less directly correlated to the performance. And as an owner, you have those profits too. So there are multiple ways of creating assets. If you buy property, there is property as an asset and there is property as a liability. Some of my friends, they think they have an asset, but they live in their house. If you live in it, it's not an asset. It's a liability, actually, because when something breaks, you have to repair it. Mm-hmm. You have a job.
Real property brings real problems. Yeah.
Exactly. Unless it is real property where an asset manager manages it for you. So the question is, if a pipe breaks, who gets the phone call? If it's you, it's a liability. If it's someone else, it's an asset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Investing in property is historically the way people built wealth. And that was always accessible primarily through, you know, the American dream was owning your own home, and that's where your wealth was built. But, you know, stocks have become much more accessible. And now you mentioned digital assets, but, you know, can you expand on that a little bit about the digital assets?
Yes. So, and that is tied to what you just said, the American dream, which became the worldwide way of strive for financial freedom. It was, you work, you have an income, and then let's say 3 times your annual salary, you put it on the side. After 15 years, you buy a house. Now, our parents, they would save 3 times annual salary and they would buy a house. Our kids, they will need 16 times their annual salary to buy a house. Mm-hmm. So what happens with the millennial generation is they go, wait a moment, this dream is not working anymore. This dream is somebody else's dream. It's not my dream because it's not working. I can be a graduate from an amazing university. I can be promoted every 2 years in my job. I will not be able to buy a house in the next 10 years or 20. So the digital assets became one of the solutions to this problem. Millennials are looking for different solutions. And now there is this technological possibility of the blockchain, which is still unregulated and nascent. So there are much higher possible upsides there. And millennials, you know, they go on their phone, they check YouTube, and they say, what? I can do a 10x on this da-da-da coin.
Uh-huh, right.
It speaks to them. And I'm also super, super interested both in the technological developments, but also on the speculation side. So 1/3 of my of my portfolio is actually digital assets. And those are primarily Bitcoin, which is a very boring digital asset, but it's a store of value. It's basically digital gold with one difference. Mm-hmm. And gold is boring, doesn't do anything. Lies around, but it stores value. Right? And the cool thing about gold is that it does not depreciate like the US dollar. It's more stable in that regard. But what millennials have found is, I don't want to have this thing and store it and defend it. And if I want to spend it, I can cut a piece out of it and buy something. Mm-hmm. So what is this thing? They call it the boomer. How do you say the boomer stones? What is this thing? Right. I want it on my phone, right? I want to flip it. I want to push it around. I want to exchange it with my peers like I do with baseball cards.
Yeah. Spend it from phone to phone. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why digital assets are much more interesting for a broad base. And I'm one of those. I'm mainly in Bitcoin right now, but there will be a point where I shift from Bitcoin to altcoins. So specifically Solana and some Solana projects like Nosana, like Solchat, and things that are either solving for distribute compute or solving for the problem that gold had. The problem with gold is you don't know how much gold there is and where it is. You just don't know. Mm-hmm. So there is an intransparency of data. And on the other side with Bitcoin, that's a gold which is on a digital ledger and you can look it right now in real time. Everybody can look it up. How much Bitcoin is there? Where is it? Is it moving or not? How many people are doing transactions? And it is audited every 10 minutes because that's the block size. So you have something that's audited every 10 minutes, whereas gold is audited basically not even every 5 years.
Never?
It's never audited. Yeah. It's intransparent. Yeah. So that's the difference. That's why I love digital assets, because I have access to the data. I can see the money flows. I can see how many users. And that de-risks your decisions, because if you see a steady increase in users, a steady increase in developers, a steady increase in transaction volumes, then you can take good decisions. I don't know the exact data of a stock when I buy it. So for example, I bought Salesforce as a stock this week. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I get some data, but I'm not in the boardroom. I don't really know what they are discussing this week. I get some rumors about what they might buy a data company, they might not. So that's rumors. Mm-hmm. It's not hard data. And then I can see the cash flow, but it's past cash flows, right? And sometimes with some subscriptions, I can get insider buying and insider selling. So it gives me some hints, but it's not a real-time transparent ledger where you can look into it and you see all the money flows inside and outside Salesforce.
Sure.
So it's a bit more opaque and more risky. That's why digital assets are really...
Yeah, we only get periodic updates from a publicly traded company. And...
If they're in the US, you have quarterly updates. If they're in Europe, they can pick and choose. Like Hermes is doing it every 6 months. Other people are doing it in Europe every 12 months. US companies, they have to have earnings call every 90 days. That's a bit better. And I can remember, we live in amazing times, because you can listen to all earnings calls and directly hear the CEO and the guidance forward. So we plan to do more of this and less of this. We want to grow organically. We will buy more or buy less. We will have shares buyback more or less. So you really get a lot of info, actually. I can remember when we had to fax each other info. Do you have info about the earnings of Google? Oh, I don't know. I have something. Let me fax it.
Oh, 20th century technology. Yeah.
And this is why I'm actually very excited about, yes, investing something in the business, but I think the business is mainly financed by the value that you create, the problems that you solve for the clients, and that is self-financing. And some of those profits, then I like to reinvest into 1/3 real estate, 1/3 stocks, 1/3 digital assets. And what I love is that everybody has access to this data. You can study YouTube and X and have a couple paid subscriptions from analysts that are actually really good and give you some solid data so that you can create your own system. Are we ready for the verdict?
I think we're ready for the verdict. Yeah. You want me to do that?
Sure.
Okay. All right. Well, I think we've talked about, you know, two ideas, investing in your own business and investing in assets. And I think both require and inspire some empowerment, right? And it's a very empowering thing to continue to grow your own business. And there's a lot of strength there. You know, on the flip side, investing in assets is a really smart thing to do, and trusting other people and other asset classes that are going to grow and thrive as well. And that requires savings, you know, taking some of your income and diverting it in that route. And I think, you know, investing in your own business has the same risks as any other publicly traded company. So even though we're talking about empowerment and these very empowering things, the risks exist no matter what. And so the only way to deal with these risks is through diversification. So I think that idea right there tells us that the verdict is you've got to do both. And you have to continue to invest in your own business and at the same time invest in stocks, real estate, digital assets. And so I think the smart play is to do both. Do you agree with that?
Yes, if we can do both, why not do both? And so you have a steady stream of creating things that would work for you so that you don't have to work for it all the time. It's also not possible if you see what we have experienced over the last decade. It's not possible. Work alone will not create wealth. You need both. You need assets, and business can be an asset if it generates wealth for you every month, if it generates a salary, and part of that salary you need to put in assets so that you have multiple streams working for you.
And I think the multiple streams idea, you know, when one is strong and one is generating cash, the other might be languishing, and you know, you're successful in the middle. You know, when one goes up, the other goes down, and you know, that's a real benefit.
Yes. And next week, we will be here again, going deeper into, okay, but what is this multiple revenue stream, single revenue stream? How can I, Simon, you said revenues, repeating revenues, recurring revenues, passive revenues. Can we double click into that? So next week, we will double click into that and look at single income streams versus multiple income streams. Should you have multiple income streams? What do they look like? How can you start building them? And see you next week, everyone.